Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this very special Boston University event. I'd like to thank Paramount Studios and especially Fred Hunsberry, Chief Operating Officer of Paramount, for hosting us in this beautiful and historic venue. I am Bob Brown, President of Boston University, and it's my great pleasure to introduce our special guest speaker, who has a very special relationship with Boston University, especially with our School of Law and the College of Communication. It's not uncommon when making an introduction for a speaker to say, this person needs no introduction. Seldom is that more true than when one has the privilege of introducing Sumner Redstone. And yet, when one has lived a life as fully and successfully as Sumner has, he doesn't just need an introduction, he deserves one. He has a story worth telling, and I'd like to take a few moments to share a few highlights of this remarkable life and illustrious career with you. Sumner grew up in Boston and graduated from Boston Latin with the highest grade point average in the history of the school. Now, that is specifically significant because Boston Latin was founded in 1635. He went on to study at Harvard, and in a little over 2 years, passed all of the required courses and amassed enough credits to graduate. During his junior year, he volunteered for the Army and was selected to join a special intelligence group whose mission was to break the high-level military and diplomatic codes of Japan during World War II. He received two commendations from the Military Intelligence Division in recognition of his service. After he left the Army, Harvard's Board of Overseers voted to award him a degree, waiving the residency requirement at Harvard. While in the Army, Sumner began his law school at Georgetown. And after he left the services, he was accepted directly into the second year of Harvard Law. After graduating, he clerked for Judge William Orr of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and taught labor law at night at San Francisco Law School. Next, he worked for the Justice Department as a special assistant to the U.S. Attorney General. He later practiced law very successfully in Washington and had the rare experience of petitioning a case to the U.S. Supreme Court and prevailing. Eventually, he entered the family's drive-in movie theater business, Northeast Theater Corporation. Employing a combination of intellectual capacity, vision, legal acumen, and very effective strategic planning, Sumner built that business into a media empire that spans the globe today. Back in the 1950s and 60s, it was common for drive-in movie operators to lease the land on which their outdoor screen stood. Sumner had the wisdom and foresight to buy the land instead. With that foresight, as the popularity of the drive-in began to wane, Sumner and his father were able to build state-of-the-art multiplex indoor theaters on land they already owned. Eventually, Sumner became involved in the content side of the business to add to the exhibition side as well. Early in his career, Sumner coined the phrase, content is king, and his business reflects that strategic approach. Through his parent company, National Amusements, Inc., Sumner is the controlling shareholder and executive chairman of both Viacom Incorporated and CBS Corporation. Sumner's strategic mission has been to develop strong brand content and to drive his brands everywhere in the world using every platform. Today, his companies have operations in virtually every field of media and entertainment, including broadcast television, cable television, local television, television production and syndication, radio, publishing, digital media, and consumer products. In all, CBS Corporation owns more than 137 networks around the world. Sumner's companies own such respected brands as CBS, Showtime, Simon & Schuster, Paramount Pictures, DreamWorks, MTV, VH1, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, Country Music Television, Spike TV, TV Land, and Logo. As you watched the slideshow, I'm sure you recognize many of those brands which have become household names. Today, Viacom and CBS brands reach and influence tremendous numbers of people around the globe from cradle to grave. We're very proud to say that many BU Law and College of Communications graduates have worked and continue to work at Viacom, CBS, and their subsidiaries. We also are very proud of the fact that Sumner has been a member of the BU community for many years. He taught one of the first classes in entertainment law at the School of Law. He was a knowledgeable, challenging, and very popular professor. The law school presented him with its Silver Shingle Award in 1994, and the university was proud to present him with an honorary degree as well. In recent years, thanks to Sumner's generosity, along with the support of Viacom and CBS Corporation, the Redstone Film Festival at VU has provided an annual platform for students to screen their original short films before thousands of moviegoers in both Boston and Los Angeles. This special competition challenges our students to strive for an unprecedented level of cinematic achievement, and it's become an attraction for top-tier writers, directors, producers, and executives searching for new talent. In September, Sumner returned to our Boston campus for an engaging discussion with students about intellectual property in today's technology environment and about the ongoing threat of content piracy. We are honored that he has offered his time to converse with our Boston University community here in Los Angeles today. Sumner will share with you his views with you. And then Gene Furstenberg, the president emerita of the American Film Institute, will join Sumner on stage for a short question and answer session. You'll have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the program. And now it is my privilege to introduce entrepreneur, media giant, lawyer, and educator, Sumner Redstone.
Thanks, Bob, for that warm and more than generous introduction. I hope my comments are shorter than his, although I like to hear them. Sitting here in the Paramount Theater, we are steeped in motion picture history. Paramount Pictures is the longest continually operating studio in Hollywood. Think about it. The Ten Commandments, The Godfather. Bob Evans is here. He did The Godfather. Sunset Boulevard, Rear Window, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and so many others, and the original Indiana Jones were all made here on this 62-acre lot. And motion picture history continues to be charted here on a daily basis. Both Paramount Pictures and DreamWorks are having a stellar year with blockbuster releases such as Blades of Glory, Transformers, and most recently, Beowulf. And of course, my friend Steven Spielberg is at work on the fourth installment of the Indiana Jones Juggernaut, which we're going to release in 2008. I'm waiting for it, and I'm sure a lot of you people are also. Now, this is my second opportunity to address a Boston University audience this fall. The first was in Boston in September, and I welcome the chance to spend time again, as I always do, with so many distinguished alumni and students. Bob and Scott Nichols and his BU team, working with Frederick Huntsbury of Paramount, have really put together another wonderful program here in Los Angeles. It's obvious from the great turnout that BU has a very strong network of alums and supporters in Southern California, and I myself count myself among them. As you heard, I spent some great years teaching the law of the entertainment industry at Boston University Law School. Knowing that most of you were not present when I addressed the BU Law School in September, I will cover some of the same ground in my talk this evening. Specifically, my long-held views on the primacy of content and the imperative of copyright protection. But I want to significantly expand on that foundation with this particular audience. Since we are here at the center of the entertainment universe and recent events, particularly the Writers Guild strike, all of this raised some intriguing and fundamental questions about the future of this business. Some of you may have heard about the four P's, which were marketing, product, price, and promotion, and placement. Well, today, I have a new subject. I want to cover what I call the four C's of global media. First, last, and always is content. Content is the once and future king. Second is copyright. If content is king, then it is copyright that must prevent the downfall of that king, the dethroning of the king. Third is collaboration with new digitally empowered audiences. And fourth is the Constitution of the United States, where I would draw your attention to the very First Amendment, freedom of expression. Content, copyright, collaboration, and the Constitution. And all of these four C's are being redefined, reworked, reinterpreted by one massive and all-encompassing D, digital technology. The impact of the digital revolution is at the heart of much conversation in Hollywood, including the one I guess we'll have later on when I am subject to interrogation. But before I delve too deeply into the digital debate, let me first give you a little background on my perspective and what has shaped it over these many years. My accent, as you may have noticed, is not that of a native Angelian. As it suggests, my association with Boston University and the town for which it was named runs both long and deep. It was at Boston University exactly 25 years ago that I first found a way to combine my lifelong passions, education, the law, and the media business. The year was 1982, and I created and started teaching a course at Boston University School of Law called The Law of the Entertainment Industry. It was the first course ever taught on that subject. Now, those of you who are lawyers in Los Angeles, in fact, anyone in this town, can well understand the need for such a course. Like motion picture accounting, law of the entertainment industry is its own unique animal. It subscribes to an entirely different and wholly, I'm spelling that W-H-O-L-L-Y, Hollywood, set of norms. An observation, by the way, that proves that despite what you may have heard about me, I am quite capable of understatement. The class, though, was a hit, so I continued teaching it through much of the 80s. I love teaching. Some of the most rewarding moments in my particular life have been spent at the front of classrooms, at Boston University, at Brandeis, and at Harvard Law School. I feel equally strongly about the law. After graduating from Harvard College in absentia, I was recruited by the war effort to work in the military intelligence. I went straight to Harvard Law School. Why did I choose the law? Why should some of you choose the law? Not to make money. Because it embodies two ideals, reason and justice. I practiced law for 7 years, first as a clerk to a federal judge right here in San Francisco, then as a special assistant to the United States Attorney General in the Justice Department, finally as a partner in a law firm. I became a major tax attorney in this country, but the world of business, specifically the media business, beckoned. My father had assembled a small collection of drive-in movie theaters, and I joined him in 1954. By the way, at 1/20th the salary I had been making in the practice of law. I took over the management of that company with the blessing of my father, and I proceeded over the next 30 years to build this handful of movie drive-ins into a nationwide global leader in theatrical exhibition, what is now known as National Amusements. And then, guess what? Came the beginning of my life, Viacom. I call that my second career. In 1987, when I purchased Viacom, it was a struggling cable television programmer. with a few underdeveloped and overlooked programming assets that everyone, I mean everyone, encouraged me to dump. By the way, in that year, when I acquired Viacom, Wall Street said MTV was a fad. I have a lot of respect for Wall Street, but sometimes you have to follow your own instincts. And they said a kids' channel like Nickelodeon would never make it. Today, that fad reaches 1 billion people around the world. And Nickelodeon is the number one channel in the United States. Today, these assets, MTV and Nickelodeon, are two of the world's most powerful and valuable media brands. Here on this lot, in fact, we have two thriving film labels in MTV Movies and Nickelodeon Films. Viacom has since expanded, targeting programming assets by building or acquiring networks such as VH1, Comedy Central, BET, Spike CMT logo, and of course they have launched extensions like MTV2, MTVU, Nick at Night, TV Land, and N and the Noggin. With Viacom's subsequent acquisitions of Paramount and CBS, including subsidiary crown jewels such as Paramount's Television Infinity Broadcasting and Simon Schuster, we built Viacom into a global media conglomerate. And if I do say so, with my total objectivity, the best media company in the world, including Paramount, where it's sitting, the best studio in the world. By the way, some of you may not know it, but in about a year, Paramount has gone from the last to number one in market share, and it will not be replaced, I believe. In 2006, in recognition of the profound changes that were reshaping the media industry, we separated Viacom and CBS to create two vital, powerful, nimble, well-managed media entities. My acquisitions, my actions throughout this career have been driven by one singular objective. I have sought out the best stories, the best songs, the best programs, the best games, films, and files, because that's the stuff of which media is made, the substance of our business. And it's this material that reaches and affects the hearts and minds of people throughout this world. So the first of the four C's is content. Today, everyone recognizes the value of content. In fact, much of the debate in our industry focuses on one fundamental topic, the impact of digital technology on content, and how that content should be created, managed, and distributed in a digital world. Now, right now, this is a hot topic in the current debate we see playing out on the sidewalks of Los Angeles and New York between the writers and producers of content. All eyes are on the new digital media platforms. Everyone seems transfixed by the riches that they promise. Although, interestingly, I must tell you, they're a very small part of the revenue of Viacom and CBS and other media companies. Great growth potential, but not really here yet. We in this industry are working to contain the threats to our content. Peer-to-peer file-sharing networks, DVD piracy, the unauthorized distribution of copyrighted content on services such as YouTube, and you know how Viacom feels about YouTube. The threats posed by digital technology are real and they're multiplying. We in the industry are working hard to contain these threats, to realize the true prize that digital media represents. So that's where 2 and 3 C's come in. The dark side of digital media, the threat of piracy, can be addressed throughout through using effectively copyright, the application and enforcement of existing laws and protocols. The bright side, the potential for new revenue streams, can be realized through collaboration. Writers and producers will agree on that, if not on everything else today. Copyright is even more right in the digital age. Copyright safeguards the fruits of intellectual labor. Ideas are free, but the exact expression of those ideas represents intellectual labor, and the fruits of that labor, and many of you are involved in this industry, have value, and they have to be protected. That's the legal and moral argument behind copyright, and nowhere is it more powerful than here in Southern California, where more than 10% of the civilian network works in the film and television industry. That's 375,000 jobs in Los Angeles County alone. Last year, the average U.S. studio film cost about $66 million to produce, another $35 million to advertise and market. That's more than $100 million in invested capital, so you can imagine just how devastating it is to learn that your new blockbuster release has hit the streets in Laos before it opens in Los Angeles. Film piracy costs the United States economy more than $20 billion annually. If this sort of theft is allowed to continue unabated, then the incentive to make blockbuster movies disappears. If studios aren't making big movies, screenwriters aren't collecting big paychecks. Fewer scripts are submitted. And believe me, lots of people will be out of work. Copyright compels creativity. It furnishes the incentive to innovate. If you limit the protection of copyrights, mind you, limit it, you stifle the expression of new ideas. Movie makers, computer programmers, songwriters, authors spend countless millions of hours creating ideas, ideas whose principal value lies in the countless millions of dollars that film studios, software companies, record labels, publishers spend bringing them to life and distributing them to the global public. That's our business model. And it is predicated on effective and enforced copyright protection. Let me quantify the magnitude of what's at stake here. There are 11 million people in the United States who work in the media and software industries. And those industries, what I call the copyright industries, account for over 11% of the entire U.S. GDP. That's roughly $1.5 trillion. Copyright matters. It protects the cornerstone of our nation's economy. Our role and our obligation as media companies is to make an efficient market in creative content. And that's a market that compensates the artist and gratifies the consumer at a price point that's reasonable and acceptable to both. Now, free may well be reasonable and an acceptable price point for the consumer, but certainly not for the artist, and certainly not for us. It is obviously impossible for us to check every computer, look over the shoulder of every user to see whether they have a license. We don't want to do that. So solutions turn on enlisting the aggregators, ISPs, device manufacturers, hosting companies, site operators. In this effort, we don't ask for perfection. It's not possible. But we do ask and demand that companies that become aware of piracy using their facilities do something about it. And I have to tell you, not all, but many of them are. New technologies that allow distributors to distinguish between legitimate and pirated content are being adopted by many major players, including MySpace, including Microsoft, and several internet service providers in Europe. ISPs in the United States, such as AT&T, are realizing the potential for using new network tools to reduce piracy. The spread of network will, in fact, augment these efforts. A factor that weighs against heavier regulation, by the way, in this sector. We don't want to solve this problem by regulation. Globally, we are starting to see governments in piracy-prone markets such as China and India taking an active interest in enforcing copyright. Why? Not for us, to protect their own homegrown content. By the way, I give a speech, and when I first went to China, I've gone many times, I was told that copyright was an idea that the Chinese people were not familiar with. But about 3 years ago, I gave a speech before their growing, burgeoning entertainment industry, and believe me, they recognize now how important copyright is to protect an industry which is in its infancy in China, which will never grow without copyright protection. As media companies, we, of course, need to make it easy for consumers to obtain our content in a legal manner. We can't let the lack of perfect anti-piracy tools keep us from forging ahead and providing the best, the most innovative, the most creative content to the consumer over whatever medium they prefer, whenever, wherever they want it. You know, the music industry suffered enormously. And why? There was no legal way to get their music on the internet. The only way that it existed was to steal it. Had they had, in my opinion, a legal way to get their product at a reasonable price, they would not have suffered the billions of dollars they have lost. But the other industries, like our industry, are on the ball. We're going to find ways to make our content available at a reasonable price. As media companies, we have to make it easy for consumers to obtain our content, as they say, in a legal manner, and over whatever medium they prefer. Whenever, at Viacom and CBS, our goal, make it available whenever and wherever they want it. Now, the people who create content are not merely our audience anymore. They're our collaborators. User-generated content is opening vast new wellsprings of creativity, and more importantly, surfing the future professionals, the professional talent in this industry. So it's extremely important, and that is the bright side of the digital coin, collaboration. Control of the media experience has long been migrating toward the consumer, but the scales have now tipped, and the consumer has taken charge. At Viacom, at CBS, we say, yes, content is king, but the consumer is also king. The consumer is not merely our audience, they're our collaborators. From uploading user-generated videos to iCalcom, to creating media-rich pages on Facebook and Flux, to picking plot lines for their favorite network program, the consumer has become part curator, part programmer, part user, intimately involved in making content individually meaningful. In this democratized and massively fragmented media environment, niche program, brands like, of course, MTV, Nickelodeon, VH1, BET, and CW resonate particularly well across multiple platforms. Now, I have long, since the early days in this business, insisted that our content be on every platform and in every place on this planet. We've gone beyond time shifting with DVRs to place shifting with mobile devices. iPods, souped-up cell phones, provide prime time anytime, That was not true a few years ago. Both Viacom and CBS have led the charge in moving to a distributed content model that enables consumers to take us, our content, take Viacom, CBS, with them wherever, whenever they go. We deliver cutting-edge content on air, online, on mobile, in HD, in 3D, even in virtual worlds. Viacom is already the biggest producer of mobile content in the world and hosts 10 virtual worlds already, with more to come. And we're a force in casual and platform gaming. In fact, you may have read about this recently. The hottest video game of this holiday season is Rock Band, was developed and introduced by MTV's Harmonix. The CBS Interactive Audience Network, through its own sites and those of its partners, AOL, Microsoft, CNET, and Juiced, just to name a few, reaches 90%, think about that, of internet users. Viacom maintains 300-plus authorized websites where millions of fans visit and interact with Viacom content. Our internet portfolio engages and reaches more visitors per month than any entertainment company in the world. Some 92 million worldwide. And that, by the way, when you hear about Facebook, that's double Facebook's user base. CBS is participating in the social networking phenomenon with its recent acquisition of Last.fm, and Viacom just launched Flux globally. The immediate objective of all these efforts, one goal: gratify you, gratify the consumer, by giving them greater access, greater control, greater interaction with our product. Ultimately, it's our hope that someday we will realize sizable additional revenue and profits in doing so. And as we have in the past, what we want to do is apportion those future digital profits in a fair and equitable manner. Now let me close by addressing the fourth C, the Constitution, which, by the way, I taught at BU Law School, as you know. The Constitution, and specifically the freedom of expression afforded by the First Amendment. You can't discuss global media without addressing the specter of censorship, which haunts too many societies, including sometimes even ours. Of course, the very digital technologies that facilitate collaboration and new creative expression also foster the spread of hateful, offensive words and images. Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson once said, "The price of freedom, of religion, of speech, of the press, is that we must put up with a good deal of rubbish." By the way, Jackson was chief prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials. As a reasonable media executive, I have no intention of pushing rubbish, but I have to defend others' freedom to create what some, including me, might very much dislike. When you allow the government to censor such material, you undermine democracy, no matter how bad the material is. You undermine democracy, and you interfere in the free market of ideas. On the other hand, when you promote diversity and tolerance and open-mindedness, the opinions expressed will inevitably converge in the truth, on the true north of our collective moral compass as a society. That's what I believe, and I hope you do. Digital technologies give the silent majority and all of its constituent communities of interest a voice that bodes well for this society. So, and I am drawing to a close, and I don't know if I was long as you were, but I tried not to be. Content, copyright, collaboration, the Constitution, and the freedom of expression it guarantees. We in the media business must protect content, the creative contribution of artists through copyright enforcement, while encouraging the free and creative expression of our audience through collaboration. And hopefully, we would like to make some money doing this. It's a delicate balance, rendered all the more precarious by digital technologies. We need to make it easy for consumers to obtain our content in a legal manner. We can't let the lack of perfect anti-piracy tools keep us from forging ahead and providing the best, the most innovative, the most creative content to the consumer. But we must also insist that our technology partners respect the right of property, not just physical property, but intellectual property, in order to nurture and promote the dynamic growth of not only our business, but actually of our entire economy. I'm very optimistic that we as an industry will continue to rise to these challenges, and I'm hopeful that we will swiftly reach a fair and equitable pact. I haven't talked about this much because I'm ordered not to. I would have liked to. A fair and equitable pact with the guilds that will give us all the flexibility and economic incentive to realize the associated opportunities for them, for us, and for everyone. And so, I'm grateful to have the chance to share my perspective with you in this evening and to share with you the four C's of the industry that we all love. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Sumner. The guidance that you've given through this revolution in the creation and distribution of entertainment content really came out in your remarks. And now I would like to welcome a very special guest who will moderate the question and answer session for our program. Gene Furstenberg is the president emerita of the American Film Institute and an alumna of Boston University. She stepped down from the presidency of the AFI just, as she told me today, 28 days ago, after a record-breaking run of nearly 28 years as its president. During her tenure, the AFI has prospered as one of America's great cultural and educational resources. Among the achievements of AFI under Gene's leadership are its role in creating and celebrating and recognizing excellence in American film, television, and digital media. Its conservatory has been accredited. It has grown into the largest nonprofit film exhibitor in the United States. Its Los Angeles International Film Festival celebrated its 20th anniversary this year. The AFI's 100 Years and 100 Movies series has reached its 10-year milestone. And the AFI Life Achievement Award has become to be recognized as the highest honor for a career in film. At the conclusion of the AFI's 40th anniversary celebration, Kirk Douglas, the 1991 recipient, presented this very award to Jean for her outstanding service to the Institute. Jean is a graduate of the College of Communication, summa cum laude, and served on the Board of Trustees of Boston University from 1983 to 1996. Please join me, Jean.
Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you.
Thank you, sir.
Take it easy on me.
Oh, I'll do my best. And if any of you have questions, I think you were given cards as you came in, and just pass them to the pages in the aisles, and we'll try to get to them as well. But first, I don't know if you recall this, Sumner, but just after you acquired Paramount Pictures, I introduced you at a CEO summit at Emory University in Atlanta. Yes. And even then, you were talking about content is king. Now, I should share with you that I remember that vividly because Mr. Redstone was nice enough to take me back on the Paramount plane that night to New York. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank you again, because that doesn't happen too often to some of us not-for-profit folks. But I wanted to start my questions back with your family, because your family was a leader in the exhibition world. My grandfather and father were exhibitors. And you took your father's company and built it into something ahead of its time, if you will, when your company built the bridge just a few miles south of here. Los Angeles really responded to that new kind of complex.
True.
What's going to happen to exhibition in this country? In 10 years, what will our theaters be like? How will audiences be responding to them?
That's a question I really rather not answer, but I'm stuck. Well, let me put it to you this way. When I acquired Viacom, I said that the reason was that I viewed exhibition then as a non-growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
And although I knew so little about television then, I saw it as a growth industry of the future. So a great debate exists today whether exhibition is a growth industry or not. While I've taken a negative view sometimes, I must tell you that the industry is growing strongly this year. So what can I say? I hope my original skepticism was wrong, and I hope to see, you know, we have a great position. We have one of the largest. My daughter operates it, and she does a great job. We have one of the largest chains of theaters here in the United States, in South America, in England, and a very successful one. So I hope the industry survives. Guarantees, you can give about very little, except Paramount. I can guarantee you, Paramount will go on and on and on to new heights.
Well, I agree with you. I hope there's always a place for exhibition in our world so we can see films in this kind of a theater, with this kind of a screen. I wanted to ask you about advertising, because I have been fascinated that this digital world is now dependent on advertising, the long-held traditional world of advertising, for much of its financial basis. And I was wondering, I mean, CBS has such an incredible relationship over many years with advertisers. How do you see, I mean, I would think that you have tremendous advantages in the new media because of that, those relationships with advertisers. And I was wondering
true.
What you thought about that.
But, you know, the digital world is not so different than the other, you know, traditional media. Advertising has always been extremely important. In fact, Viacom is probably the only company in the world that could live on advertising only. Mm-hmm. Without subscriber fees, not that we don't want them, we love them, but that's how important advertising is. So advertising will be the same in the new media world as it is today. Critically important. We seek it, and of course the way you get it is by increasing the ratings on your program. And that is a primary motive of both CBS and Viacom, and they're succeeding. Increasing the ratings of the programming they give to the public, and the advertisers pay for it.
And it's also true on the internet.
It is.
It's about the
eyeballs,
right?
When I said the new media,
yeah,
I include the internet, of course.
Because technology is always moving forward, it's so ironic to me that we are having another technology battle with the DVD. I mean, when the DVD first came out, it was beta versus VHS. And why can't we learn? Why can't we learn that, you know, 20 years later, doesn't the consumer want one format? Which Which model do we buy this Christmas?
Well, unfortunately, in the world we live in, there are competitive forces that seek exclusivity for their own network, for their own device. I'm afraid that's always going to be the case. On the other hand, competition is good. While it may not seem good in this environment, it's competition that steals a company so it can win. And after all, winning is everything. So that's what you have to expect.
Okay, winning is everything. And you've shown us how to do that. And you've done it incrementally. You took those two brands in 87 that people said couldn't survive, couldn't have a niche audience that would be large enough, and now has the largest audience of any cable brand. 6 years later, you acquired Paramount. 7 years later, you acquired CBS. 6 years after that, you split into two entities. So I have a feeling that in 6 or 7 years, you're going to do something that will surprise all of us.
Actually, I have something in mind.
And are you going to tell us?
No, of course not. But it could surprise.
Could it be sooner?
No, here's the point. The real point is this. Every acquisition, every move was filled with stress. People forget today the stress I went through to acquire Viacom and the battle with my good friend today, Barry Diller, who cost me only $2 billion to acquire Paramount.
Did you ever forgive him for that?
We're very good friends today. You know, Mandela said, without forgiveness, there is no future. Remember that.
Okay.
So anyhow, yes, we're very good friends. But people have forgotten the stress that was related with the fights for Viacom originally and then Paramount, which is vicious. You know, it's an interesting story. I have to tell you this. Barry had the press. Barry had Wall Street. What did I have? I had the waiters. Because apparently, every time I went to a restaurant, they would say, I hope you win. So I must have treated the waiters better than Barry did. That's the only thing I had.
All right, remember that. That is a great story.
Well, it's true.
All right, okay. When I went to the AFI in 1980, Chuck Heston was the chairman of the board. And he said at that time, this is the only art form where the artist cannot afford his own tools. That has completely changed. And you referenced all of the amateur storytellers.
Yes.
Using the new media. And how do you see harnessing that talent to the advantage of your various companies?
Well, the answer is simple. We're always on the lookout for talent. Talent everywhere. Talent on the street may exist. Mm-hmm. Talent in movies. Talent in television shows. Talent in the new media. Our success depends on creating great programming. And what does that depend on? Talented people. So that's a goal that CBS and Viacom, and I'm sure maybe some other media companies have.
Well, it's such a different environment today.
It is.
The
environment is different. Not that different. We've just added another media form. But the goal is the same. You can't create great programming, innovative, creative programming, without wonderful talent.
I think that philosophically what you set out today about this new technology always being additive and giving us
yes.
another way to reach people and to touch people, philosophically is what has made your company so successful.
Well, thank you. We try to look to the future. we try to have some vision. You know, as I said, when I acquired Viacom, everyone thought I overpaid. I think it cost me, I bet the ranch, sold everything we had, borrowed money, invested $500 million. Even in today's market, that's worth about $8 billion. So yes, you have to be able to see the future.
Have each of the other steps that you've taken been as pressure packed as the first, as the initial one? Because you can't make these kind of changes without that pressure, can you?
Every day of my life.
Every day.
Is filled with pressure. Because I work as hard today as I did 50 years ago, and you always have goals to achieve, dreams to realize, and you can't do it without stress.
Are you worried about the U.S. economy?
Well, I guess everybody is today.
I mean,
the market, you know, has been not so good. Some people feel we're going into a recession. I'm not going to predict that, but we know a lot of people are saying it. So maybe yes and maybe no, but it's a possibility. So any business, man, not just in the media business, in fact, every person in this audience is worrying about the economy. Because we all have one form or another of an investment in this economy. So naturally, we worry about it.
Here's some good questions from you. Given the rise of digital media, what kind of future do you foresee for traditional print media?
Print media?
Uh-huh.
You better ask Murdoch about that. You see, print, we have always been interested in fast-growing businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And print media has not been fast-growing. So it's one of the areas that we have stayed out of. That's not to say that others can't make it work. It's just not our baby.
Okay. Here's someone who asked about one of your C's. Or another C, consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that media consolidation has had an influence on the independent producer in creative and financial ways?
I've heard that question so often.
Have you really? Okay.
It's nauseating. Look, in
well.
This country, look, I started with nothing. And I control two big media companies today. In this country, don't plead independence against big companies. My company was minuscule. In this company, in this country, there's opportunity for everyone. Everyone in this audience. I don't care where they come from, what their background, what their ethnic group is, everyone in this audience has a chance to succeed.
Okay, here's one you're gonna like.
I'd like them all.
Oh, okay. Well, I
don't throw me any marshmallows. I want tough ones.
All right, let me go to this other one here then. I'll come back to that one. Do you believe that there is a proper price that content can or should be offered to reduce piracy? You were talking about what's
no,
the
well, to some extent, that's true. I mean, as I said, the music companies had no, they suffered enormous losses with foresight they didn't have to suffer because there was no legal way to buy their content at a reasonable price. We and our companies, and I'm sure other media companies, are aware of that. So we have to make the price fair, but we're not going to give it away to avoid piracy. If you give it away, you might as well have it pirated. So you have to determine what's a fair price so that you're not inducing piracy, but frustrating it.
It's a tricky...
I'm not so tricky. That is for companies that know what they're doing.
Okay.
Like, of course, should I mention Viacom and CBS?
Well, here's a question that I like. It's about... the first internet show, Quarter Life, which was created by Marshall Hershkovitz and Ed Zwick, two AFI graduates. And I don't know if you've seen it.
Go ahead.
It's quite a good show that now has been purchased by, dare I mention, NBC.
Of course.
So it's going this way and then that way. Uh-oh.
I hope for a change. This is a good one. Because they haven't been good at purchasing other shows like our companies have. But maybe this is a good one. I hope, for the sake of these people, this has been an aberration from their normal policy.
Oh, you like that one. Okay. Okay, what essential skills, talents, abilities do you feel that were instrumental in your success? But here's the best part of the question. How can someone get a job as an assistant to your assistant?
Well, I don't know, you asked me several questions. Let's have the first part again.
Okay.
And I'll try the second part.
Well, the first part is, obviously you are deeply committed to succeeding at whatever project you have on, but this young person was trying to understand sort of what characteristics you thought were the most important.
Well, in my case, I wrote a book called A Passion to Win. All my life, I've had a passion to win. And that means trying, whether I practiced law, whether I was a media executive, all my life I've tried to be number one. That doesn't mean that I've always succeeded, but you have to try to be the best at what you do. I don't care if you're a janitor, a plumber, or a media executive. To succeed, you have to have that passion, that commitment to be the best at what you do.
Well, someone wants a one-word answer. What is the one thing that sets you, passion to win, you may need three words here, okay. What is the one thing that sets you apart from other people, if you could describe in one word?
No, I don't think I'm, you know, I think, thank you for the compliment, whoever sent up that question. I'm not apart from other people. I have what other people also have, a commitment to win. I think, you know what I've often said when I hire another executive, what counts are three C's, competence, commitment, and character. And without character, I'm not even interested in commitment or competence. Character is the number one thing that counts.
Well, I think that's a good place to close. But I'd like to close by thanking you for a few things. First of all, the Redstone Film Festival, which I think is an extraordinary opportunity for Boston University students to have their films seen. I want to thank you for your contributions to our country. What you did in World War II saved a lot of lives. And it was your intellect and your commitment that allowed you to crack those Japanese codes. So I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for embracing the new media, because I think that is where we're going to be. And it's exciting to have a company like yours at the forefront of that kind of creative thinking. And I guess last but not least, I want to thank you for a lifetime of giving through your entrepreneurial leadership. When you have passion, you can succeed. And that's what you have proven. So thank you very much.
Well, I must reply briefly.
Please.
I want to thank you for thanking me.
Thanks very much.
Well, let me add my thanks to Sumner and Gene for a wonderful conversation, and I'd like to invite everyone to join us in the lobby outside the theater for reception. Thank you for coming.
These chairs are not easy to get into.
I'm fine.
Or easy to get out of. Thank you.